This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Good afternoon. I'm Carol Christ. I'm the director of the Center for Studies in Higher Education. I think I know most of you here. And we are delighted this afternoon to have the opportunity to hear Ami Zussman talk about her work. Ami is someone we had the great luck to attract to the center when she retired from the office of the president. She's a research associate at the Center for Studies in Higher Education. Her research at the center has been primarily focused on a phenomenon that I find really fascinating, which is the emergence and expansion of new kinds of professional doctoral degrees, many in fields that had never require doctoral degrees for being a professional practitioner, and the implications of these new degrees for access to the professions. Ami previously served as the coordinator of graduate education planning and analysis for the University of California system, so obviously has a great deal of expertise in this area. She also worked on student outcomes assessment. She developed long-range graduate enrollment plans for the UC system, created instruments to measure and compare graduate student success, and she was the lead UC liaison for the National Council on Research's assessment of doctoral programs. She's authored or was the principal staff for university-wide reports on interdisciplinary graduate education, self-supporting graduate programs at UC, and workforce projections for graduate degree recipients in different fields. So I'm so delighted that she has agreed to share her research with us.
Thank you so much, Carol. As Carol said, what I'm going to talk about today is the creation and growth of new kinds of doctoral degrees, of doctoral professional doctoral degrees. And as the title of my talk says, I'm going to ask the question, if clothes make the woman or the man, does a doctorate make a professional? As some of you know, I have been working on this for a while. In fact, started getting interested in it when I was at UC Office of the President at a time when some of these new kinds of professional doctorates were just being developed, and UC and CSU were, which at the time did not have authority to offer any of them, were considering whether to start them up and what this would mean for California higher ed. As I got to know more about these professional doctorates, I became especially interested in how much they've grown and looking at what's really driving this tremendous amount of growth in the last 15 to 20 years. Are they justified? And what are the outcomes? So I'm going to be talking about professional practice doctorates, or I'm going to often use an abbreviation on my slides and maybe my talk, of just PPDs, fewer syllables. The definition for this comes primarily from the U.S. Department of Education's IPEDS unit, which says, in part, the professional doctorates are a doctor's degree that provides the knowledge and skills for the recognition, credential, or license required for professional practice. This is a really very recent definition that was adopted by IPEDS because suddenly there were these new kinds of doctorates. There was an old category called first professional degrees, like MDs, JDs, and this new degree includes all of those plus the kinds of degrees I'm going to be talking about. But I've modified the degree a little bit to talk both about degrees for entering into practice, which is what IPEDS focuses on, and what are called advanced or post-professional degrees, because many of these degrees started out being for people already in the field who are going to get an advanced degree, and then some of them are moving toward being required as in order to enter into the profession, to become an audiologist, to become a physical therapist. And I'm looking just at the ones created in the last, since 1990, maybe the last 20 years. Give you a sense of these. This is, you know, just there are over a dozen of these that have been created, mostly in the last 20 years, 15, 20 years. And most of them are in the health field, but they do range from architecture to plant medicine and all sorts of fields in between. So you're a Berkeley audience, and if you're able to read this, you may notice that, as far as I know, none of these particular degrees are offered on the Berkeley campus, although some of them are offered on other UC campuses. But you may ask, so, you know, why do you care? Well, I think there are a number of reasons why these are really important degrees. First of all, as I said, these are like, but they're also unlike, the older kinds of professional doctorates. They have some new characteristics. And as Carol mentioned, they're often in fields that never had doctorates, and yet they're being now either required or increasingly being expected for individuals to enter the profession. Again, just sort of a quick look. The red there are the new professional practice doctorates that I'm focusing on. You can see. And see, there was a whole bunch of new doctorates from optometry, doctor of pharmacy, and so on in the 1940s to 60s. But then since 1990, there have been even larger numbers in a really short time. So there's really been a quickening of the pace of the creation of these new doctoral degree titles in the past 20 to 25 years. Not only have new doctoral degree titles been started up, but in many areas, the programs and enrollments in them have skyrocketed. This you can see in this graph, which shows the two big fields among these new professional doctorates. The red line is physical therapy. The blue is nursing practice, and they've just shot up. Overall, I estimate there are over 650 programs, starting from, you know, maybe a dozen or so in 2000 or so. There are now over 650. Over 13,000 degrees, I estimate, were awarded in the past year, and enrollments are more than 50,000. Now, this is still a small percentage of the number of total doctorates awarded in the U.S., but again, I suggest that they have a lot of serious and significant implications. First of all, again, as Carol mentioned, as for access to the professions, if now in order to become one of these fields in optometry or perhaps not optometry, that's an older one, at physical therapy, perhaps in the future occupational therapy, you now have to have a doctorate. They also have implications for how professionals will be prepared, for the quality of service to clients and society, for institutional missions and resources. And particularly in California, this raises questions about the master plan for higher ed, because many of these new programs are in institutions that until recently did not have authority, such as CSU, to offer these kinds of doctorates, but we're offering master's programs in these fields, and then we're being called on to turn their programs into doctorates. And finally, there are questions about what does it mean to have a doctorate. So let me turn to four questions that I'll talk about today. First, what do these new kinds of doctorates look like? Who and what are driving the creation of these new doctorate titles, and once created, the expansion of them in various to many different programs? What are the outcomes? How have they affected students, professionals, and programs? And finally, what are the broader policy implications of these trends? For this part of the study that I'm going to talk about today, I did case studies of three professional fields: audiology, physical therapy, and nursing practice. And I also analyzed 11 other professional fields, three more fields that have these newer kinds of professional doctorates, and eight older professional doctorates, such as the MD and the EDD and so on, in order to get a comparison between the new ones and the older ones. So I'll talk just very briefly about the characteristics of these new kinds of doctorates. Just sort of an eyeballing, what you see, the red here are the new doctorates, and what you see is they tend to be shorter on the whole than other kinds of professional doctorates or the PhD, 2.5 to 4 years, whereas, you know, PhDs or MDs takes a lot longer to do that. So they're fairly short programs. This is after the master's degree. In many ways, they have characteristics like older professional doctorates. Saul was mentioning before we started that often the rationales for them are similar. We'll talk about that in a minute. They also, like older professional doctorates, focus on a specific profession, audiology, acupuncture. They're geared mostly to non-academic careers. They don't require original research, and in fact, generally, they don't require any kind of capstone project. They do have a significant clinical component, but they require shorter amounts of training. They're typically much less selective. They still use a doctor title. Let me turn to what's driving these degrees. To try to understand what's driving them, I looked at three different conceptual lenses that have often been applied to the growth in higher education, the growth of credentials and the upward credentialing of higher education. The first of these, the human capital theory, is perhaps most often applied to understanding why higher ed in general has grown in the U.S. and elsewhere in the world. And it basically says that when applied to these PPDs, the doctoral training is required in an increasingly complex work environment. If this is true, if this theory, if it is capital, human capital driving these, what we would expect? Employers would be really champion these kind of degrees, and employers would be hiring people holding these doctorates at higher rates and for higher salaries. And also that clients would have better outcomes, if that's what's moving them. The second explanatory model is what's known as educational credentialism, which is perhaps best known in a book that Randall Collins wrote called The Credential Society. And what it says is that credentials really just reward the educational level, not job-related skills, and that they're designed to raise professional status, autonomy, and income by controlling access to the profession. If this is why these new doctorates are being developed, like human capital, you would expect higher rates of hiring and higher salaries, but based on cultural capital, education level, not necessarily on job-related skills. And you might also expect that as in order to gain status, one field after another would pursue these higher credentials to sort of keep up with the Joneses. And finally, what's called neo-institutionalism is presented as an explanation for why programs have grown in these fields. And what this theory says is that it's not so much economic benefits, but rather organizations are seeking legitimacy by becoming more like one another and more like high-status organizations. So as I've talked about these, you might notice that there is some overlap among these theories. They use different terms to explain somewhat similar kinds of outcomes, but their assumptions and implications lead to different implications for the future. So that's why I think it's important to try to get a better handle on what's behind the growth of these new professional doctorates. So that's the framework, the theoretical framework. So I'm going to turn now briefly to look at the three case fields that I've examined to identify what's happened in them. The first is audiology. And I love finding cartoons on Google. Let me give you one bit of context I might not have said, and that is, particularly in health fields, in order to get, you need to have a license to practice. And to get a license in most of these fields, you must graduate from an accredited program. So the accreditor is really critical, not only in determining whether an individual can be licensed to become a professional, but whether programs can survive, because if they can't be accredited and with what individuals need, they go out of business. In audiology, as early as the 1980s, there were several professional associations that started talking about the need for a new kind of professional doctorate, not a master's as had been used up till then, and not even a PhD, but a new professional doctorate. And it was so that that audiology could be seen and to become more like other doctoring professionals. As one of the main associations said, the advanced level of training the professional doctorate mandates would ensure the highest standards of delivery of service, certainly a human capital argument, and would strengthen audiologists' position as autonomous practitioners. Others in the field said one of the main reasons for holding doctorates would be that it would make it easier for audiologists to lobby for direct access to patients, that is, not having to go through MDs, direct billing, and other professional necessities. So as you can see, there were, in fact, multiple rationales being put forth by the professional associations for why these were needed. They were workforce arguments, complex environment, and they were also status and presumed economic benefits to the practitioners. So what happened? Well, in 1997, the accrediting entity, which is, in fact, a unit within the professional association, set 2012 as the deadline by which programs must lead to an audiology degree, a doctor of audiology, in order to be accredited. But in 2004, the accreditor actually moved that deadline up from 2012 to 2007. Because by then, by 2004, almost all of the programs had either converted to a doctor of audiology or had closed. As one Midwest chancellor said, "We've been under pressure to take what is basically a master's degree and call it a doctorate, but no one institution can afford to boycott the process." One result of this is that there has been a sharp decline in the number of newly trained audiologists. There was over one-third of programs and of those getting degrees dropped between the year 2000 and the year 2014, as programs either couldn't meet accreditation requirements or didn't have authority to offer them. In California, for example, CSU had five master's degrees, master's programs in audiology. It did not get authority to offer a doctor of audiology, and all five of those programs closed. And today there are just two doctor of audiology programs in California. One is a joint program between UC and CSU in San Diego, and the other is a brand new program that's just starting up at the University of the Pacific. So before I turn to the outcomes of these, let me look at my second field, which is physical therapy, and some of us in this room are, you know, having a lot of experience with physical therapists. I heard that. Until 1998, all you needed was a bachelor's degree to become a physical therapist. But in the 2 years later, in 2000, the Maine Professional Association set a goal of requiring the doctor of physical therapy by 2020. As an audiology, multiple reasons were given for this need. They were to serve clients better, to improve autonomy and economic benefits. For instance, the Professional Association said, physical therapy by 2020 will be provided by physical therapists who are doctors of physical therapy. And here you'll hear words similar to what you heard in audiology. Consumers will have direct access to physical therapists without going through an MD. Physical therapists will have hold all privileges of autonomous practice. Lots of other reasons were given, one of which, for instance, is to be consistent with higher status doctoring professions like medicine, osteopathy, veteran medicine, and so on. And the argument was made that the master's programs, which were about 2 years in length, already meet the requirements of a clinical doctorate. So what happened? In 2009, the physical therapy accreditor, program accreditor, which again was closely allied with the professional association, mandated that by December 2015, all physical therapy programs must lead to a doctor of physical therapy in order to be accredited. But as in audiology, most programs had converted long since. By 2010, in fact, there were only nine that had not yet converted to doctor of physical therapy, and I think half of those, I think about five of those were in California at CSU, which had in 2000, and which only got authority in 2010 to offer independent doctorates. Finally, my third case is a nursing practice. For words are never spoken, probably. The doctor of nursing practice followed close behind the physical therapy in terms of rapid growth of programs and enrollments. In 2002, there were just two doctor of nursing practice programs, but by 2014, there were 264. The story for nursing practice is a bit different from the other two. The professional doctorate in nursing practice was championed not by the professional association, but rather by nursing deans at colleges. As in audiology and physical therapy, these association of nursing deans argued that the PPD was needed for several reasons, including increasing complexity of the healthcare environment, but also for issues of status and parity. What they said was, nursing educational preparation ought to be analogous to other health professions, again, other doctoral professions, such as the doctor of pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, latter by which had just had a few doctoral programs at a time. But it added that despite going toward a doctoral level, transitioning to the doctor of nursing practice will not alter the nurse practitioner's current scope of practice. Missing, however, from this statement, unlike the other two fields, was any statement of what economic benefits this would have for practitioners in the field. And I would suggest that it was, in fact, for that reason that the Maine Practitioner Association was leery of the DNP, and until it was assured that current practitioners would not be disenfranchised if they did not have a doctorate. And after that point, it sort of largely remained neutral in this battle. However, once the title Doctor of Nursing Practice was fairly firmly established, it appears that many programs felt competitive pressures and perhaps pressures to be like their competitors, like the higher status programs, to move to the doctoral program. As I said, there was a rapid increase in programs in nursing practice, doctor of nursing practice. One expert in the field said, most schools of nursing with graduate programs feel tremendous pressure, whether or not they have the resources to mount quality DNP programs, to convert to DNP programs that prepare nurse practitioners for entry to practice. It also provided an opportunity for other programs to move to the doctoral field. As one Midwest administrator told me, doctoral programs give status to the faculty and status to the campus. So what happened in this case? Well, here too, the professional associate, well, the nursing association set 2015 as the deadline by which it assumed that that those entering into the profession of nurse practitioner would complete a DNP to enter the field. But unlike in audiology or physical therapy, the accreditor has so far refused to mandate that this happened. Again, my assumption is, at least in part, this is because there was no clear evidence of or rationale put forward on how this would benefit the individuals. So, given this history, let me look at, you know, how what happened in terms of the outcomes in these three fields. And I've combined them because you'll see some very similar comments. In all three fields, the professional, the training in the programs sometimes was not much longer than the old masters. The outlier really is physical therapy, where on average there was only 12 weeks more in the program, over half of which was in clinical training. In audiology, the program itself went from 2 years to four, but the old master's program, after you completed the old master's program, you needed a year of clinical fellowship. So the additional time to get a license was an additional year. It is an additional year, but it's one additional year. In nursing practice, it's on average about 2 years, but programs vary widely in how long they are, their career goals for their students, and their requirements. However, despite the sometimes short programs, student costs and student debt are much higher. Take an example. In physical therapy, tuition increased by 63% in the public institutions. And in nursing practice, it was nearly double that for a master's. There was a report, as I mentioned, CSU gained authority to offer independent doctorates in both nursing practice and physical therapy in 2010, and these programs are really just beginning. But there was a report by the California Legislative Analyst Office last year that talked about these physical therapy programs and concluded that the programs had a significant increase, that the average tuition and cost, the average tuition cost was $90,000 for a doctor of physical therapy in the CSU, significantly higher than the master's, and the LAO said, not fully justified. And it also found that the average debt students carried in these programs was over $72,000. Despite this, I found little evidence that new professional doctorate holders have been hired at higher rates or got higher salaries. Now, I will say these are fairly new degrees and things can change. But so far, what it appears to be happening is that employers value experience, not the degree. And in fact, in at least two of the three fields, the professional associations themselves in nursing practice and in physical therapy did surveys, did studies, and acknowledged that there was no evidence that there were higher fees, the higher salaries, or better career outcomes for those who were getting these new doctorates. But there's an interesting twist to this. Current practitioners were exempted from doctoral requirements, even in those fields where they're now required for entering professionals. On the other hand, they were offered shorter routes to get the professional doctorate. In audiology, they could get online degrees, and for quite some time, they could get what was called an earned entitlement audiology, a doctor of audiology, for a payment of $750. So, and about half of all current practitioners utilized these routes before they were effectively closed. And similarly, in physical therapy, there are what's called transitional DPTs, which can require anywhere from 4 to 20 courses. So, but there's no clear evidence to date that clients are better served. Again, these may change. These are new. There may be, and fields do change as people within them change. But to date, there isn't clear evidence that they are being better served. As for workforce supply, the evidence is mixed. In audiology, if you remember the graph I showed, there does seem to be a potential supply shortage because of the reduction in degrees, unless something happens. And there are some trends in California now that there may be one or two additional programs in audiology, but these may be years away. In physical therapy, it appears likely that the demands will be supply will meet demand. Perhaps that's no surprise, given that the programs are not that much longer, although they're more expensive. In nursing practice, where there is, in fact, a serious shortage of nursing practice faculty, there is unclear evidence whether the DNP will help meet that need, since the faculty shortage is usually considered to be due, at least in good part, to the fact that hospitals and other non-academic sectors can pay much higher salaries than can academic institutions. So it's unclear. So, all right, so this is the outcomes. What does this say about who and what have been driving these programs? Well, what I found then is that it is professional associations backed up by accrediting entities or professional school administrators in nursing that are really championing behind these moves. It is not employers who did not seek them. It does not seem to be largely the job market. There's little evidence that the labor market is driving these, and as I said, little evidence, at least to date, that there have been better outcomes for clients that wouldn't be met simply by having more experience. But rather, it does seem to follow from what educational credentialism would say, that it's mainly for status, for autonomy, and for income. However, at least so far, most of these fields have not seemed to get the higher salaries or hiring rates that the educational credentialism theory would predict. So they have not been successful at that. once these titles were created, then what's driven the substantial expansion of programs in these fields? And that seems to be explained by the what David Riesman called the academic procession. Institutions were pursuing legitimacy and status. Many programs quickly converted long before they were required to do so, and despite costs and uncertainties, including, for instance, there were questions raised by the programs themselves about the quality of doctoral faculty, the quality and adequacy of clinical placements. But it does seem to matter who champions the professional doctorate and why. And as I say, in nursing, it seems that because the professional accreditor, professional associations really wasn't behind it, it is not yet mandated. However, what I find in looking at the stories of audiology and physical therapy is that when there were a majority of programs already offering these doctorates, it seems as though the creditor said, oh, we've got to make this mandatory. And so it may yet be that nursing practice, the accreditor there will say, most of them are now nursing practice degrees. We've got to make these mandatory. I've sort of gone over how these have affected students and professionals and programs very quickly. For students, higher costs, more student debt. Professionals, not higher salaries. Current professionals are exempt. There has been a little success in some fields, such as physical therapy, in that some have gotten more autonomy. They have gotten direct access in a number of states so that they do not need to go through medical doctors anymore. And the fields are pushing for more autonomy despite pushback from countervailing forces like the AMA. For programs, some programs were forced to close, particularly in audiology, and others leveraged the requirements to gain a doctoral authority when they didn't have them. I've talked about these concerns that have been raised in terms of faculty, financial support, and so on. I will say that growth is continuing in some fields, such as audiology, and even have declined, and physical therapy, I think, has reached saturation and is now tapering off. But in other fields, particularly nursing practice, but also in occupational therapy and acupuncture and oriental medicine, the number of programs is growing. And in all of them, enrollments are growing. And other fields are adopting these programs, these new professional doctorates as well. In occupational therapy, there are new entry-level professional doctorates. Also in acupuncture and oriental medicine. And just very recently, nurse anesthetists decided to mandate that by 2022, all nurse anesthetists must complete doctoral programs in order to enter the field. So, broader implications of these. The first, as I said, is what should a doctorate mean? And who decides this? Should a doctorate just be based, as they are in many of these fields, just on completing a certain number of credit units? Or should all doctoral degrees be required to meet certain fundamental criteria? If all these programs become professional doctorates, and credentialism is in play, will we need to create even yet another degree so they can continue to raise the status of their professions? And who decides? In many of these cases, it is the professional associations and their allied accreditors that have been determining what degrees institutions offer. Now, program accreditors in these health fields are very important in setting standards, but should they also be determining what degrees are being awarded, or should it be the faculty in the universities, the regional accreditors, and so on, and the various stakeholders to determine what is the appropriate degree? Access is a key question. As the three cases illustrate, there has been rising tuition in these fields. My data suggests that, especially given shrinking public support, much of the increase in costs for these programs are being borne by students in terms of higher fees, and you're getting much higher student debt tuitions. So will this impair the ability of low-income individuals to enter these kinds of professions? And there are costs for these, for the institutions. Even if they're just extending the programs a little bit, there are these are clinical programs, and they're expensive. So that's why they're relying on tuition, but there's also a limit to how much you can raise tuition based on students' ability to pay and often based on legislators' unwillingness to allow institutions, public institutions in any case, to expand these. And for the higher education system-wide resources, there are questions, such as in California's, who should be doing what? Will doctoral resources be directed to, in our case, from UC to CSU? But alternatively, if the research university in this state, UC, is unwilling to create these programs, what then? What if these are fields that now are have been mandated to offer doctorates, and the comprehensive institution doesn't have authority to offer them, and the research university is perhaps somewhat reluctant to do so? And finally, I think the most important question that needs better answers is that will these new professional doctorate degree holders serve clients better? If they do, if they serve clients better, if they help fill clinical faculty positions, if they lead to higher salaries and better career outcomes, they may be well worth these costs. But so far, the evidence of this is limited. Thanks.
Will you answer questions?
Absolutely. Questions, comments?
Ami, very, very interesting update on this vexing situation with doctorates. The institution that has, at least at the early point, was very worried about the role that they had to play was WASC, and it was partly because they have very strong the staff had very strong feelings about what constituted appropriate support for PhD-level programs and questioned whether some of the institutions that felt required to shift these degrees to doctorates would be lacking. And I wonder if you have anything to say about how this scenario has been playing out with WASC accreditation.
Yeah, and actually at one point I did talk to WASC people. My own feeling is, well, first of all, I think the different regional accreditors play different roles. As some are more active than others, WASC is a little more active than some of the others. But I think it's a missed opportunity. I think the regional accreditors ought to be taking a much firmer stand than they are on setting standards. There was a report now almost a decade ago by North Central creditors on raising questions about these professional doctorates, but then there was no follow-up. WASC, as I've looked at it, has largely deferred, and as have other regional creditors, have largely deferred to the recommendations of the program-level accreditors, the accreditor in audiology, the accreditor in physical therapy. So I think they haven't taken a stance. And, of course, in California, there is no longer a California Post-Secondary Education Commission that might raise some of those questions as well.
I'd like to ask you to go a little deeper on what you meant by direct access, which is driving several of these. Mm-hmm. I think of an audiologist as somebody who's an independent practitioner. Are we thinking of the ability to get health insurance coverage or the need for referrals or what?
Yes. Referrals is a big one. I know when I talked at one point to physical therapists, faculty, they were eager that they not be required to, that people not have to go through an MD to be referred. They wanted to have that pool so that they could, tap into that pool of potential people needing physical therapy immediately. And I understand in 2013, California did pass legislation that if health plans agree to this, you can do that. I don't know if mine does or whatever. But yes, it's referrals, it's also billing, it's the assumption that if you don't have to go through a doctor, they will be able to get more people who will say, oh, I'm not going to first see my doctor who will then recommend me. I will be able to call immediately the physical therapist and get seen right away. And therefore, I will have that a much better access to clients.
So it seems to me a number of years ago that nurse practitioner all of a sudden needed to have a master's in nursing, and that was, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, yeah. And that this is like another level up. And two things that I've heard from people who are in nursing and who are physician assistants is that there's this competition aspect to it, and that a lot of the nursing doctorate thing has come as a way to differentiate themselves from PAs, physician assistants, and that it's like that next step up, where in the past, doctor of nursing was to become like an academic or a supervisor, a manager person, and that was why you were doing a doctorate. And now it's like that. So is it coming from also some clinical competitiveness? I don't know if that's the right word, but do you know if there's aspects of that?
Well, I think that probably makes a lot of sense. It's interesting to me that the physician's assistants have not gone along these lines, have not been seeking, as far as I have seen, to become doctor of physical assistant or whatever the terminology. I think one of the things I just mentioned in passing, there has been some strong pushback from the American Medical Association against these degrees, but not always successfully. I don't know. It may be that some of that has been, as I say, everything.
They have masters now too, right?
They have masters too,
which it did
right?
Used to be.
Yeah, yeah. In all of these fields, if you go back 20, 30 years ago, you needed bachelors, yeah. And then you needed masters.
And now,
yeah, it's moving into that area.
Yeah, I'm really struck that most of these are in the medical field, and it seems one of the things that's going on is a huge restructuring of both services in the medical field and how patients access those services. And I was wondering whether you're at all connecting this to what's happening with MDs, I mean, the very tight control of the number of MDs granted, that the that is exerted, the kind of recent increase in osteopathic doctors of medicines. It just seems there's a there may be a large story behind mm-hmm. this mm-hmm. extraordinarily interesting, mm-hmm. provocative narrative mm-hmm. about the medical field itself and how mm-hmm. it's changing.
That's a really good point. And for sure, including things like the Obamacare, there is an increasing need for more health professionals and a desire to have those that will not be as expensive. So there is certainly a push to have more people with who are not MDs, but who can play important healthcare roles.
Yeah, but I'm also wondering whether there's a kind of artificially imposed scarcity of the MD degree by the AMA.
Well, yes. I mean, just as I would say was true most clearly in audiology, not less so in the other two fields, there is an attempt to control access to the profession, both for very legitimate reasons and perhaps for also status and income. And so this could play a role in other professions picking up the slack, but also then wanting to imitate some aspects of those MDs with their own doctorates.
So, Ami, I just got hearing aids, as you know, and so I have some experience with audiologists, very recent, and I know your research because we've talked about it over the years. So I was sensitized, I should say, to differences. So I went to four people, and I was doing my own research. So I and then a four. So one was a regular ENT guy. No problem there. So I'll put him out. You know, he didn't give me a hearing aid. So I went to a person, and I always asked him what their training was. So the first person I saw had an MA in audiology from Cal State Sacramento, I think, and probably in her mid-40s. The second person I saw had a doctor of audiology from, I think, Vanderbilt University with a plaque in her office and insisted on being called doctor and literally wore a white coat. And the third person was a hearing aid specialist with about 18 months of training. I think that's what's required in California at Costco. Now, and all these people are audiologists selling hearing aids. They all did exactly the same thing. Gave me a hearing aid test. They wouldn't take each other's results. The results were identical with every. I brought all the test results. They were identical. They all insisted on doing their own tests, and they got the same results. So there were no differences there, and they each had their own favorite brand that they were selling, so there was no similarity in terms of what they were recommending across the board. And in terms of price, the MA and the had the most expensive. The doctor of audiology was a close second, and Costco was third at the bottom. But not because of lack of training, but because of the business model that Costco has implemented that is in direct competition with independent audiologists. You know, the model of buying high volume, a limited number of hearing aids mm-hmm. at high volume, and then the store within a store model, which reduces overhead significantly. You know, you see this in the pharmacies in Safeway now. So my observations were I got no difference in service from any of these people, or I couldn't notice any difference in quality. But what the degree the doctor of audiology did for this one person, N of one, was to make her look like a real doctor. I mean, she didn't want me to call her by her first name, Susanna. It was Dr. So-and-so. And she had a white coat, which puts a distance between her patient and her and establishes status between an authority between the patient and her at a time when many MDs are now abandoning the white coat for exactly that reason. They're adopting it, was my observation. And then, so I finally bought my hearing aids from Costco because they were the cheapest by half. And I think that partly why, not completely, but partly why these professions, and this is just my own little hypothesis, are adopting higher levels of credentialing is because they're not because they not only because they want to look like doctors, and many people can't distinguish between an MD. If you call yourself a doctor, they immediately think you're an MD, you know, in the general world, and a PhD, but they can't distinguish between a doctor of audiology and a PhD. And so they become medical doctors in patients' eyes. But also there's a whole proliferation of people in those fields who are also practicing with much less training. And it's a need to distinguish themselves from the lesser trained people that I think is also an impetus toward acquiring higher level degrees that give them the title of doctorate. And I think both processes are going on. As far as I could tell, unless you had a very specialized hearing aid problem, which I don't have, the people at Costco were just as well equipped as the doctor of audiology. Now, yeah. They don't want to hear that, but that was my experience.
No. I think what you're pointing up is pretty much what I've found, and what I'm saying is that they're trying to make themselves more valuable. And as their prior degrees lost their cachet, and this is what educational credentialism argues, is that as master's degrees weren't quite as valuable, then you had to go, because there was more similarity with others in the field, then you had to go to another step. And yeah, and it becomes increasingly difficult to distinguish among a doctor and a doctor and a doctor.
There's also a proliferation, as I'm trying to say, maybe not so well, of lower status people called nurses. I mean, who can tell the difference between an RN and, oh my God, a CPN, and then there's the DPT, you know, the doctor nursing practitioner.
Yeah.
You know, there's this incredible proliferation of titles.
Yeah.
That people don't know what they mean. And you put on all these titles on your board for all these. I said, oh my God, that's what that title means. I've seen it against people's initials. I had no idea. So if there's a title proliferation going on, it's just both at the low end and also at the high end. And so it's not just nurses or not just doctors or not just audiologists.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I think a lot about the highest degree that an institution offers. And one example is a lot of community colleges in various states are now offering bachelor's degrees. California is the newest kid on the block, but it's about 20, 25 states. Same thing's happening with doctorates and something in California. Do you have any idea how common it is that there are master's level institutions in other states that have just offered their first doctorate because of this kind of thing?
Yes, there are. I don't know the numbers, but I know that in several states, well, again, take physical therapy. You either had to be able to offer a doctorate, partner with another institution, or close shop. And so in California, in Minnesota, and in some other states, those, what we typically call comprehensive state universities that used to go just to masters, went to the legislature and said, we've got to offer these degrees, and the research university isn't offering them. We have long-standing programs. We've got to do this. And so I think in many cases they have, in fact, been successful, although sometimes it's a mixed bag, because in those two states, for instance, what the legislators said, well, all right, you can offer these degrees, but we don't want you to reduce the number of undergraduates or the funding for them, and we're not really going to give you more money, but go offer them, which is why then student tuition goes up further. But yes, it's happening, and I think the move of community colleges to offer bachelor's degrees is a very similar phenomenon.
I'm interested in knowing if there's similar processes in non-medical, I mean, where the accreditation is not through professional associations. I'm thinking of law, or even perhaps like business school, where the MBA may be either student or employer-driven, mm-hmm. Looking for higher level degrees.
Well, the JD is an interesting thing. The JD in some ways is like these new degrees. There was a JD, I think, around 1903, and then the schools realized, it was like 2 years or something, the schools realized that maybe it wasn't really a doctorate degree, so they called it an LLB. And then in the 1960s, very quickly, they all became JDs. And there was very little change. In fact, from what I've read, there was no change in the curriculum or anything. But they were suddenly they were Juris Doctors. There is a Doctor of Business Administration, which it seems to be interesting. Both the EDD, the Doctor of Education, and the Doctor of Business Administration started out as pretty much research-oriented degrees, and now there was an analysis a couple of years ago by NSF that said, well, most of them no longer are. They're more like these practitioner degrees. So there is a movement toward them. But the health fields do have the power of the accreditation to force these changes, whereas in education and in business, you don't have that. So there may be institutional prestige. Excuse me?
Would it be more of a market or an institution?
Yeah, so it seems clearly that's what happened with the JDs, that, again, after a number of institutions said we're JDs, the others said, oh, well, we better offer a JD too. But it's easier then for other forces in those fields, such as a state, a regional accreditor or a state coordinating agency, should there be one, to say, well, no, that's not an appropriate degree for you to offer. In the health field, it's really the accreditor, the program accreditor, really has the clout ultimately to determine, which is, as I suggest, questionable to do that.
Ami, everything I know about this subject I learned from you. And then when we both retired in the same year, I stopped thinking about it. I'm really delighted to see that you've kept the fire burning, because this was a huge conundrum for us. Resources, politics, the times made it very difficult for us to pursue the question on a policy level at the Office of the President back, whatever, 2000, whatever, 7
whatever
years ago.
Whatever it was.
Whatever that is. 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. But we were deeply worried about this from an academic perspective. And I remember and it's still a conundrum to me. The problem, and mostly it is health-related, was that there was no place to go. And how could you have become part of, even if we could have been part of a national conversation in those really difficult days in the mid-2000s, that where would a national conversation take place that was larger than any specific field of health? I mean, this very incestuous situation of accreditors, requiring their own, programs is just like that. The conflict of interest is just way too obvious. But we couldn't, there was no other there. Our history has always been the AMA. It was, kind of made decisions for the entire healthcare industry, which is no longer true at all, obviously.
Yeah.
They've lost their clout. But there wasn't any place to go on that particular side. A second piece that may emerge, I don't know. I mean, the whole insurance industry question that Jed sort of brought up, what's going to get reimbursed? Who's going to make those decisions? And will there start to be conflicts amongst these groups providing similar experiences or being distressed or outraged or whatever they're going to be about somebody else providing care to their patient on a subject for which they thought they were equally qualified? Will that work itself out? And where's the consumer in this? Are there consumer groups that are going to start to care about this? Do they become champions or not, making it better or worse? But then the bigger question is, is it making a difference to them? And do they feel that their needs aren't being served? that's sort of tangential. But the other question that you raised is like, who does define the doctorate, and where is the there for the academic universe in the United States higher education that makes a definition when it's starting to be important? It looks like for all the reasons you're pointing out. Yet, there ought to be a difference. It lowers the value of some. It raises the value artificially of others. Anyway, great job, Ami.
I really think, as I said, it is a big question who nationally could do this. I think if we had really active regional accreditors or what is the association of accreditors? Not COPA, CHIA. If they were to get together, they might have done it, but there doesn't seem to be the will or desire. And in fact, most of the members of CHIA are these program accreditors rather than the regional ones. So it hasn't happened. And questions about what is and should be a doctorate, I think, are key here.
Let's thank Ami again for the wonderful presentation.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.